Well, good morning. Unfortunately, my eyes are not as good as they used to be, so in order to read my notes, I'm going to have to wear these. But somebody said I look like a professor. I'll take it. Dr. Wakeham. And some of you are also wondering where my Leafs jersey might be today. It's folded up on the shelf. And as they prepare to play golf, I prepare for summertime. So anyways, that's what's happened on the weekend. Moving on. Today is a special day. It's a day that we recognize and remember what we all have in common. If you have ears to hear, then you have a mother. In fact, we all have mothers who bore the pain of our childbirth. And that's okay, because afterwards they forget all about that, right? And so, happy Mother's Day. Of course, some moms have passed on, and so have sons and daughters and dads and husbands. But today we just say thank you to all moms. My mom is unfortunately very ill, but we had some good news this weekend. And like I said at prayer time, she seems to be recovering. So thank you, Mom, for everything. And even if you have never had kids of your own, or if you might never have kids, you can be a mom to somebody else's kids. And I truly believe that. I think that's what's kind of special. And so, as I've always said, mums and women are awesome. So that's amazing. We here also have several women at Generations Community Church who are servants and prayer warriors, encouragers. In fact, the list goes on. And I thought it was interesting when I began to search for a topic for today. I noticed in Genesis chapter 2 that no other part of creation was suitable for men. And that is why God had to create something better. Women. And boy, is that true. In fact, guys, have your wives ever saved you when you were clueless at times? Every day? Excellent. I mean, I would agree with you. You know, if something has happened, and for me, it's happened far too many times, where Diane, who she once heard a conversation that I was in, and I had missed something that was very important and serious that was being told to me. And I totally didn't respond. I was thinking about something else. I was in a daze. And so she said something to snap me out of it and kind of said what was said so that I could respond to it. And she saved me. And so I am very thankful to Diane for that. I was going to try my iPad, but I think I'll stick to my paper notes. Anyways, even times when we go to the cottage and Diane says, "Hey, did you bring pants?" Something of that nature, and it'll be like, "No, I didn't." So I would put the pants in my bag and off we go. So she saves me all the time. I felt it would be a good idea to read a fun and interesting Old Testament story. A story of a woman who made an eloquent speech. That's what I'm titling this sermon. And she saved men from making big mistakes. And I have a picture, just a neat picture that captured this story in the Old Testament. And her name is Abigail. Now, how many people know the story of Abigail and Nabal? A couple hands that went up. Good, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to bring forth a story that maybe not very many people had heard of. It's found in 1 Samuel 25. You're welcome to read along because we're actually going to read the whole story. So I'm hoping I can get going and not be too late today. And it's a story of intrigue with potential senseless killing only to be foiled by a beautiful woman wise in her years who God uses to save the day. It sounds like a great story, doesn't it? To set the stage, it was in a time when David was not yet king. He was anointed king by Samuel, but he was running for his life from King Saul. And at the end of 1 Samuel 24, the previous chapter, David had just spared King Saul's life. And then it says Saul went home. And David also had left to rest in what it says, the stronghold. David's struggles were many at that time. And so the story of Abigail and Nabal in the next chapter is a pause from his life struggles. 1 Samuel 25:1 begins with the unfortunate death of Samuel, the prophet who anointed David to be king, which spread through all the land. Samuel was publicly useful and left behind a reputation which ranks him among the greatest, to which all of Israel mourned for Samuel. They buried him at his home in Ramah. Now, I have a picture. It didn't come up quite as well. Up in the blue there is Ramah. It's northwest of the Dead Sea. Now, I don't know if you were in that area, Pastor Pat. Were you up there at all? You were close to it. So just south of that is Jerusalem and Bethlehem, where King David was born. And then as we continue to read, we'll find out that David arose and went down to the wilderness of Paran. Now, some Bible versions, I noticed, had said the wilderness of Maon. Either way, David is south of Ramah in an area that takes place west of the Dead Sea. So we're going to begin reading, and we are in 1 Samuel 25. We're going to read verses 2 and 3 as we start this story off today. And this is what it says. A certain man in Maon, who had property there at Carmel, was very wealthy. He had 1,000 goats and 3,000 sheep, which he was shearing in Carmel. His name was Nabal, and his wife's name was Abigail. She was an intelligent and beautiful woman, but her husband was surly and mean in his dealings. He was a Calebite. So, as we see in this story, that Nabal is from Maon. So I have another, we'll bring that picture up, Diane. And you can see in the red, Maon, and then Carmel is where he has his business dealings. So I just wanted to give you a sense of where this was happening back then, many, many years ago. So Nabal was wealthy. And in those days, to have 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats is a position of wealth. Now, when it comes to shearing sheep in those days, it became a festival to celebrate, in a way like you were royalty. An abundance of food and drinking for the locals who were involved in the shearing of the sheep. So you could say this was quite the party. We also learned that Nabal is a Calebite, meaning he is of the line from Caleb, from the story. Now, do you remember the story of Joshua and Caleb? But he did not possess the spiritual qualities of his illustrious forefather. Instead, Nabal was said to be harsh and evil in his dealings. We also learned that Nabal's wife is Abigail. She's very intelligent and beautiful, which are wonderful qualities. Abigail will become a very important character in this story. So we're going to keep reading verses 4 to 9. While David was in the wilderness, he heard that Nabal was shearing sheep. So he sent 10 young men and said to them, "Go up to Nabal at Carmel and greet him in my name. Say to him, 'Long life to you, good health to you and your household, and good health to all that is yours. Now I hear that it is sheep shearing time. When your shepherds were with us, we did not mistreat them, and the whole time they were in Carmel, nothing of theirs was missing. Ask your own servants, and they will tell you. Therefore, be favorable toward my men, since we come at a festival time. Please give your servants and your son David whatever you can find them." And when David's men arrived, they gave Nabal this message in David's name. And then they waited. I'm not sure why David felt that he should protect the sheep shearing taking place in Carmel. But he did. And to David, this was deserving of compensation for him and his men. Now, perhaps during this festival of shearing, many criminals show up. I'm not sure. But they were a protective barrier to which nothing happened. And it may be that having protection was desirable in those days. I simply don't know. Let's continue reading, verses 10 to 12. Nabal answered David's servants, "Who is this David? Who is this son of Jesse? Many servants are breaking away from their masters these days. Why should I take my bread and water and the meat I have slaughtered for my shearers and give it to men coming from who knows where?" David's men turned around and went back. When they arrived, they reported every word. How do you think David, you know, the military hero, he was a king elect whose fame was widespread. How do you think that he would respond to such a pretend ignorance of David? Nabal knows who he is, and yet Nabal's evil dealings is now seen in his action toward David and his men. Is this a wise decision or a foolish decision from Nabal's part? Now, perhaps, like David, God is protecting us when we didn't ask him to. Maybe we don't see the dangers as to why he is. But let's consider to give God thanks and Jesus continuously for even the protections we don't know anything about. I'm sure one day we will find out, but we may not know yet. After hearing the report, David spoke in verse 13. David said to his men, "Each of you strap on your sword." So they did. And David strapped on his as well. About 400 men went up with David, while 200 stayed. Now, in my opinion, in this story, the plot is thickening. David has over 600 men with him, to which he is looking for compensation. 400 men with swords? Now, that's an army bent on conquest. No good can come from this. Let's keep reading, 14 to 17. One of the servants told Abigail, Nabal's wife, "David sent messengers from the wilderness to give our master his greetings, but he hurled insults at them. Yet these men were very good to us. They did not mistreat us, and the whole time that we were out in the fields near them, nothing was missing. Night and day, they were a wall around us, the whole time we were herding our sheep. Now think it over and see what you can do, because disaster is hanging over our master and his whole household. He is such a wicked man that no one can talk to him." Now, this servant confirms that David's protection was like a wall that gave total security, deserving of compensation. And so he suggested to Abigail that she should compensate. This servant of Nabal recognized the potential dangers and bravely spoke them to warn those in danger, which in this case could have involved him as well. Now, Nabal is an interesting character. He's like a mean boss. Maybe you have experienced a boss where you couldn't say anything to them, or they'd blast you for it, or maybe they're unapproachable. When you fear to speak with a boss, it is definitely, definitely challenging. Now, I don't know, but if you are a boss here today, this story should encourage you to be more approachable and listen to those who work for you and to see the things that are from a different point of view. I mean, it could save your life or your business. And besides, we're to be Christ-like every day. Now, this kind of affects me a little bit because I'm somewhat of a manager. And I have people that are under me, and I have to give instructions. And I know people want you to be approachable. And so I do try my best to be approachable, not like Nabal. The servant sought out Abigail, hoping she would, you know, save the day. Story sounds a bit like another story that we've studied in our study group. The story of Esther, right? Beautiful, smart, brave. She saved the whole nation from certain destruction. But that's yet to be future from this time. Esther hasn't happened yet. Let's continue reading in verses 18 and 19. Abigail acted quickly. She took 200 loaves of bread, 2 skins of wine, 5 dressed sheep, 5 sheahs of roasted grain, whatever a sheah is, 100 cakes of raisins, and 200 cakes of pressed figs, and loaded them on donkeys. Then she told her servants, "Go on ahead, I will follow." But she did not tell her husband Nabal. Now, well, after reading that, that's a lot of food. I mean, after all, she's bringing over 200 loaves of bread and all this other food for 600 mouths to feed. This is, in fact, hospitality like I've ever seen. I don't think I've ever seen a party quite this big before. Abigail is intelligent. She knew that Nabal would disagree with her actions, but that the Lord's choice had fallen and anointing had fallen on David. Abigail recognizes the consequences involved in Nabal insulting David. By her actions, she chose to obey God rather than men. Now, I thought I would throw a New Testament verse in there. Acts 5:29 just simply says, "Peter and the apostles answered, 'We must obey God rather than men.'" Have you ever had to choose to obey God rather than men? Maybe you paid the price for it. This is a good reminder that we must obey God rather than men. Abigail chose not to tell Nabal, at least not right away. Have you ever heard the phrase, and I'm sure some of you have heard this, "It's easier to ask for forgiveness later than to ask for permission now"? I mean, I see a lot of heads nodding and some people agreeing with me, right? She seems to have taken this phrase and used it for good. In this case, it was to obey God. But I would warn that we don't use this phrase to avoid doing what is right in the eyes of the Lord. Let's continue reading, verses 20 to 22. As she came riding on her donkey into a mountain ravine, there were David and his men descending toward her, and she met them. David had just said, now to the men, he had just said, "It's been useless, all my watching over this fellow's property in the wilderness, so that nothing of his was missing, and he has paid me back evil for good. May God deal with David, be it even so severely, if by morning I leave alive one male of all who belong to him." Wow. Okay, David gives a strong oath of self-imprecation. Yes, I had to look up that word. I saw that word, thought I'd write it down. The word means a spoken curse, but it's towards himself. David swore he would kill every male that belonged to Nabal, or God was to deal severely with him. Now, to me, David seems to be overreacting. That's my opinion. But what do I know? I don't live in the 20. I live in the 21st century. He lived many, many years ago. David is ready to shed blood over this insult that Nabal gave him. And perhaps we're seeing the bad side of David coming out. He is running from King Saul, who wants to kill him. And yet, over Nabal's pretend ignorance, David does the same as Saul and sets his mind to kill Nabal and everyone who belongs to him. I'm not sure how David justifies this in his heart, but he did. This is where, in verses 23 and on for a bit here, we get into Abigail's eloquent speech now that she is in front of David. So let's read from verses 23. When Abigail saw David, she quickly got off her donkey and bowed down before David. With her face to the ground, she fell at his feet and said. Now I want you to pay attention, because immediately she calls herself a servant to him and that he is her Lord. Okay? Just so that you know what's happening here. She says, "Pardon your servant, my Lord, and let me speak to you. Hear what your servant has to say. Please pay no attention, my Lord, to that wicked man Nabal. He is just like his name. His name means fool, and folly goes with him. And as for me, your servant, I did not see the men my Lord sent." Okay, let's pause here. Names are often very important for many reasons in Bible stories. I always encourage people to look at the names and see how they fit. In this case, Nabal's name means fool. And Abigail points this out. She says, "He is just as his name, Nabal, fool." Clever way of asking David to ignore Nabal, the fool, as she steps in to compensate David for his protection. Let's continue reading. Verse 26. "And now, my Lord, as surely as the Lord your God lives, and as you live, since the Lord has kept you from bloodshed and from avenging yourself with your own hands, may your enemies and all who are intent on harming you, my Lord, be like Nabal." Abigail recognizes that she is preventing David from bloodshed. But she uses the past tense. This is what I thought was interesting when I read this. The Lord has kept you. Well, he hasn't even gone there yet. Like, she's in the middle of keeping him. But she says, "kept you." She's getting his attention. Abigail believes she will be successful in that the Lord will prevent this bloodshed through her intervention. Abigail again clearly pronounces, "May your enemies and all who are intent on harming you be like Nabal," or, transliterated, fools. Perhaps fools are not worth shedding blood for. I think that's what she's suggesting. Can you imagine if your name was Fool? You know, people who come to you and say, "Hey, Fool, how are you doing today?" Or call you up and say, you know, "Fool, do you want to go somewhere?" I mean, I don't understand, but back in those days, something had happened that caused his mother to call him Fool. I don't know what it was, but I'm glad. It's strange, but in this case, it seems to be fitting, because he seems to have done what his name is. Let's continue reading. Verses 27 and 28. She continues to say, "And left this gift, which she brought on the donkeys, which your servant has brought to my Lord, be given to the men who follow you. Please forgive your servant's presumption. The Lord your God will certainly make a lasting dynasty for my Lord, because you fight the Lord's battles, and no wrongdoing will be found in you as long as you live." Abigail is definitely intelligent. In her insight that David is a man who fights the Lord's battles, unlike King Saul, whom the people desired. Remember when they wanted a king? He said, "We want a king like all those other nations." And God said, "I'm your king." And they said, "No, we know, but we want a king like them." God said, "Fine, but you know what a king will do to you." So God granted that to them, and Saul became their king. David, she knew, was God's true king. But this interesting part here about a lasting dynasty, Abigail declares, "A lasting dynasty for my Lord." That is a feature of the future Davidic covenant from whom Jesus, the Messiah, would come. She is considered, apparently, in the Talmud, which is another Jewish writing, to be one of seven female prophets of the Tanakh, the Old Testament. But some have suggested it is by her sheer intelligence rather than special revelation. The Davidic covenant is found later in Nathan's prophecy in 2 Samuel 7:12. We're not going to look that up, but if you went to that, you would see that there is a promise that the Messiah would carry on, Jesus would carry on the Davidic line forever. All right, let's continue reading. Verses 29 to 31. "Even though someone is pursuing you to take your life," she says, "the life of my Lord will be bound securely in the bundle of the living by the Lord your God. But the lives of your enemies he will hurl away as from the pocket of a sling. And when the Lord has fulfilled for my Lord every good thing he promised concerning him and has appointed him ruler over Israel, my Lord will not have on his conscience the staggering burden of needless bloodshed or of having avenged himself. And when the Lord your God has brought my Lord success, remember your servant." Abigail assures David that while King Saul is pursuing to kill him, God will protect him. It's a bit of a metaphor. Back in those days, a man, something similar to like if you saw somebody on the streets who didn't have much, but all that they had, they would keep close to themselves. And that's the metaphor she's using there. Just like a man who bundles his treasures and belongings together so that no one can touch them, that is what she is saying about God. That there is a group of living people whom God is going to bundle together. And that God keeps them close. Abigail assures David that God will hurl his enemies quickly like the pocket of a sling. Now, we all know David knew how to use a sling. In fact, that's one reason why he's being chased by Saul, right? He killed Goliath with a sling. Now, I have a video somewhere at home. And I remember they wanted to know how confident was David. Remember when Saul tried to put armor on him and he's like, "Oh, I'm too small for this. I can't carry it. Take the armor off. I'm just going to take my sling and my stone and go out after David." How confident was he? I watched a video where they took a sling. I don't know if it was about 2 to 3 feet. Just had a little pocket and two strings. And all they did was put a rock in it. They still use them today. I don't know if they tie it to their finger on one side, and all they do is simply sit there. Once they get that winding up, as soon as they let it go at the right moment, that rock flies out straight. And in that video, they had a watermelon just to see what would happen, and it blew the watermelon apart. That's how accurate it was from quite a distance. He didn't even have to get close to that sword. All he had to do was swing that rock and throw it. Well, Abigail knows this, and so she uses that idea that God is going to take away his enemies like the pocket of a sling, throwing out that rock super fast. Abigail is encouraging David not to just rethink the, I'm going to change the word here, murder of Nabal, because that's what he's about to do, and his household, but to see success without doing that. This is what she said. She said, a staggering burden of needless bloodshed, and when he succeeded, David should remember her. Smart move, as we shall soon see. All right, so David now has the opportunity to respond to this eloquent speech. Verses 32 to 35, David said to Abigail, praise be to the Lord, the God of Israel, who has sent you today to meet me. May you be blessed for your good judgment and for keeping me from bloodshed this day and from avenging myself with my own hands. Otherwise, as surely as the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, who has kept me from harming you, if you had not come quickly to me, not one male belonging to Nabal would have been left alive by daybreak. Then David accepted from her hand what she had brought him and said, go home in peace. I have heard your words and granted your request. Now notice how David immediately praises the God of Israel who sent Abigail. He blesses Abigail for following God and obeying God. This is an example for all of us to recognize and praise God who is working all things for good and to bless those who obey God's calling. Abigail saves the day. She is the heroine of the story. She saved her family from certain death, and she stopped David from a needless killing, and she can now go home in peace. Upon returning home, however, how will Nabal receive the news of what happened? Well, let's find out. Verses 36 to 38. When Abigail went to Nabal, he was in his house holding a banquet like that of a king. He was in high spirits and very drunk. So she told him nothing at all until daybreak. Then, in the morning, when Nabal was sober, his wife told him all these things. Check this out. And his heart failed him, and he became like a stone. About 10 days later, the Lord struck Nabal, and he died. Apparently, Nabal may have suffered a stroke, as some believe, when he had heard what had happened after she told him. He seems to have become paralyzed, unable to move. Maybe he was unable to talk, I don't know. And then, of course, 10 days later, his life was taken from him. Now the text says, okay, and we were looking this up this morning, so I added this to my notes. The text uses the word lav, or la'av, in Hebrew, because we were trying to figure out, is it a stroke, or did he have a heart attack? But if he had a heart attack, it says the word died, I think, in the text. So it uses a word that means died, but then it says la'av. So in Hebrew, this means either the inner man, or the mind, or the heart. But that the text says something had died within him. God showed up and struck Nabal, and 10 days later he died. God avenged David himself by God's own hand and not that of David's. Now that Nabal has died, let's see King David, or king-elect, I guess, David's response. Verse 39 to 42 says, when David heard that Nabal was dead, he said, praise be to the Lord who has upheld my cause against Nabal for treating me with contempt. He has kept his servant from doing wrong and has brought Nabal's wrongdoing down on his own head. Then David sent word to Abigail, asking her to become his wife. His servants went to Carmel and said to Abigail, "David has sent us to you to take you to become his wife." She bowed down with her face to the ground and said, "I am your servant, and I am ready to serve you and wash the feet of my Lord's servants." Abigail quickly got on a donkey and attended by her five female servants, and went with David's messengers and became his wife. Now again, David praises God right away. He's giving credit to God for taking care of the evil affairs of Nabal, removing David from the equation. He didn't have to do anything. And God, through Abigail, has kept David from doing wrong. After the fact, David knows that it would have been wrong for him to have shed blood. David was spontaneous. In his desire, he wanted to shed blood. Perhaps it is a moment of weakness in David's life where he acted with anger wrongfully, but God used Abigail to prevent it. I mean, I know what it's like to respond spontaneously. When something has wronged me, has that ever happened to you? When somebody says something, I don't know, they shouldn't have said, and I have to really learn every time to be in control of my thoughts and my words. I wish I was all wise in that, but that doesn't happen. I find I have to really continue to be Christ-like at work when something goes wrong. And I would encourage that for you today as well. If somebody wrongs you, we see it in hockey all the time, don't we? In the playoffs, as soon as somebody does something, what do they do back? And they end up getting the penalty for it. Anyways. In this story, David knows a good thing when he sees it, doesn't he? He was quick to recognize that Abigail is a woman who is intelligent, smart, beautiful, and brave. She is a woman worth marrying. And so he requests to be joined in marriage to her, and Abigail agrees. And they live happily ever after. Well, it doesn't quite say that, but I thought all stories are supposed to say that. Truth is, if you read the last two verses, there's some technical things about wives of David. And yes, he had, I think in the future, Bathsheba and some other things, some other wives. But we are to only have one wife and one husband. We know that. In conclusion, do you, like David, recognize Jesus working all around you through people like Abigail? Are you like Nabal, the mean business owner who is unapproachable and desires his wealth more than hospitality, willing to humiliate the not yet king of Israel? Foolish, I guess we could say. Are you like the servant who wants to warn others of certain danger when you see it, no matter what happens? Are you like David, who acted wrongly at first but humbled himself and recognized God's intervention through Abigail and praised her for it? In fact, he blessed her for it. Or are you like Abigail, that intelligent, beautiful heroine of the story, who has everybody's interest at heart, speaking truthfully, not evil, about anyone, and understanding the role God was playing in David's life? She is like a mom to all around her. Now, I decided I brought this with me. We're going to go see my mom today. And my sister had brought a hymn book. And when Kara and I were there last week, we sang a couple songs from the hymn book, and my mom started singing. There's something about music. You all know what that's all about, right? So the problem was my mom, she's lost a lot of muscle. So she can't lift even a hymn book anymore. So Diane had encouraged me to maybe put some music down on paper. And a song came into my head today, and I realized this might have been a song if Abigail was living today. You all know this one. I have decided to follow Jesus. I have decided to follow Jesus. I have decided to follow Jesus. No turning back. No turning back. What a unique story, and we have a lot to be thankful for in reading about Abigail. I love this sermon series title, because it can take you wherever, and that's maybe sort of why I did this. Abigail is the unlikely hero of this story. Unlikely heroes of the Bible are always fascinating to me. It's like all moms, she's displaying great qualities and knowledge of God's ways, desiring peace. Jesus said, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for theirs is the kingdom of God." Amen. Let us pray. God, we thank you for this day and remembering moms all over the world. We remember you. We know that you even had said that you wanted to gather Israel under your wings. And even though they would not, you were there for them. And that's what you wanted to do. Just like a hen gathers her chicks. Thank you for the stories of the Bible and the unlikely heroes throughout its pages, Lord. You recorded their stories so that we could see the God-like characters you desire in us. And we see how you intervene to save people. May we be willing to be like Abigail, to be used by you, even in dangerous circumstances. May we today learn to be more Christ-like in our attitudes in a world that needs you when evil seems to reign all around us. To end, for yours is the kingdom, the power and the glory, forever and ever.